and puked and soiled herself, the woman's head snapped toward me. She fired off a tirade in Romanian that would have stripped the flesh from a rhino carcass. The woman had a truly poisonous mouth, and I let her vent for maybe 15 seconds, impressed with her creative vulgarities. They were very specific. She told me I was the slimy aftermath of a Turkish ass-fuck orgy. She accused me of fornication with my mother on Easter morning. She said that I buggered baby goats. It was the baby goats one that pissed me off. I like baby goats. Ever see those videos of them in pajamas? Adorable. I removed the fake glasses and the fake mustache, then squatted down in front of her. I said nothing. Her words trickled down and stopped as she caught sight of my smile. And then my face. Despite the side effects, Jumpstart clears the head pretty quickly. It's intended for situations like this. The drugged glaze cleared away, and I saw the exact moment when she recognized me. Her eyes snapped wide and filled with horror. Her skin blanched to a corpse pallor, and her lips began to tremble.
No.
I smiled. Yes. Chapter 130. Hotel Timișoara, Timișoara, Romania.
You're him. Oh, sweet Jesus on the cross, you're going to kill me,
she said, not framing it as a question. She spoke in Romanian, which was fine. That was one of my languages, and I'd brushed up on it in anticipation of this moment. Not with her specifically, because I still had no idea who she was, but for a moment like this. She tried to shrink back through a hole in the dimension. She tried to twist free of her bonds. She tried to kick me. She tried to scream, but all I did to stop that was to lay my hand on the pistol next to me and give a single shake of my head. She fell into a shivering silence, tears cutting lines down her cheeks. I gave her the old Joe Ledger smile, the one that crinkles the skin around my baby blue eyes and makes my teeth look like an ad for good dental hygiene. I have questions, I said softly. You're going to answer them. She forced a smile onto her face and moistened her lips, and God help me, tried to look seductive. Despite what looked like Campbell's chunky soup smearing her mouth and lap, despite sitting in a cooling pool of her own urine, she was actually trying to work her charms on me. Oh, for fuck's sake, sister, skip the bullshit, I said. I'm not the audience for that crap, and you're not the type to peddle it. She dropped the act, and for a moment I saw the real her, cold, calculating, and vicious. Then fear crept back and clouded that.
What do you want?
She asked. I want two things, I said. The first is the code for the wire transfer. No, don't look surprised. Don't play dumb. And don't lie to me either, because you won't like how that works out. She stared at me, trying so hard not to cry. I'll only ask this once, I said. The code. Something in my voice reached her, and she suddenly rattled off the code. I punched it into the burner, and then, once the deposit was underway, fed the target account number to Mind Reader. The funds would go to an account I set up called WC, shorthand for War Chest. Whatever I didn't need for my hunt would eventually be donated to Free Tech. Good, I said to the woman. That's very good. You're earning brownie points. You'll need them. Next question is, what's in the bag you were going to hand off? I cut her off by holding up a single finger. If the next two words out of your mouth are don't know, you won't like what happens next.
Don't hurt me,
she said in a much more fragile voice than she probably wanted to use. That will depend on how you finish that sentence, won't it? I asked calmly, or at least my voice sounded calm. Inside my head, though, a furnace was burning toward overload. It scared me how easily I could joke and function and sit here having a chat while the darkness inside of me was so damned hungry. She kept trying to look away, and each time I snapped my fingers loud as a gunshot to bring her back to focus. To me. Do I need to ask again? I murmured. Right now we're having a conversation, but if you'd rather play truth or consequences, say so. I can work with that. Hell, I could have fun with that. Despite her toughness, there were tears in her eyes, and her breath was shallow and rapid, panic breathing. It took her a few tries to get her voice.
It's a chemical agent, R-33. That's what they call it.
I thought the word, aha. I'd seen references to that all through the files I'd been stealing. What does R-33 do? What's it for?
I'm not remember the rules,
I cautioned.
No, I really don't know, she insisted. At least I'm not sure. Please, you have to believe me, I'm telling the truth. All I know is that it's some kind of enhancement thing, an energy booster, but I don't know how it's to be used. All I really know about it is the code name and the cost.
I gestured to the other two. Do they know? She turned to them and considered. She nodded to Woodpecker.
He's a local broker. He'd know who he was taking it to and where, but that's all.
Okay. And the other guy? I said, indicating Slender Man. She licked her lips again, not to try the seduction thing, but to stall.
I don't know him, not even his name. He uses a code name, the cat.
The cat. How interesting. I said, aha, aloud this time. I grilled Cruella for another 20 minutes, but it was clear she really didn't know anything more. Thank you for playing, I said, and shot her with the dart gun. Mind you, it was tempting to just freaking strangle her. I wanted to. Or maybe the darkness wanted to, hard to really say, but there was no proof she had blood on her hands. I had her prints, a scan of her face, and I took a swab of the inside of her mouth to capture her DNA. All of that would go into the system, and God help her if she came onto my radar again. I left Woodpecker to sleep. He was too much of a small fry for my needs. Lucky him. The cat, Slenderman, was another matter entirely. I jabbed him with a Siret of Jumpstart and watched him twitch and cough and piss and puke his way out of Sandman's arms and into the awful realities of the moment. I watched him pull at the threads of what he last remembered and tie them into the fabric of what was happening, what was about to happen. The woman had blanched, but the cat turned an even whiter shade of pale as he realized who I was.
Ledger,
he gasped, making it sound like the name of the devil. He was not far wrong. Chapter 131. The Playroom, undisclosed location near Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Kuga was alone at the pool when Mr. Sunday walked out onto the patio. Brooding clouds hid the sun, and the trees were filled with ugly birds. Kuga did not get up and instead let Sunday drag a chair over and sit down. The salesman wore crisp blue jeans with a razor crease, hand-tooled cowboy boots with hummingbirds and roses on them, an embroidered western shirt with the same pattern, and a brown sport coat with leather elbow pads. He even had a white cowboy hat on his head.
"Christ, Sunday," said Kuga. "You look like you're either going to try to sell me a certified used pickup truck or run for office in some little redneck town."
"I believe I would enjoy either of those pursuits."
Sunday sat down in an Adirondack chair. The black birds in the trees screeched at him, but when he looked up at them, they fell silent and stood shuffling their wings.
"Cockroaches with feathers," he said.
"Why are you here?"
"Because I knew you'd be alone," said Sunday. "Your little Spanish extortionist is busy elsewhere."
"You really don't like each other, do you?"
"I don't trust him."
Kuga grunted.
"Santoro, why the hell not?"
"More to the point, my friend," said Sunday. "Why do you?"
"He's never given me any reason not to trust him."
"No, of course not.
The world's subtlest and most effective manipulator of people would never dream of making you, the cash cow whose tit he's been sucking on, distrust him. Heaven forfend.
Kuga picked up a cold cucumber slice from a chairside tray and bit it in half. You're out of your mind. Sunday merely smiled. Chapter 132 Hotel Timișoara, Timișoara, Romania. I gave him the same charming smile I'd given Cruella.
Pisica, I said, using the Romanian word for cat. Let's have a nice little chat.
He literally shot to his feet, something that's mighty damned hard to do with ankles and wrists bound and all sorts of complicated drugs playing Mary Hobb in his bloodstream. Ghost also jumped up, and suddenly the goofy dog with a pile of treats transformed into some prehistoric proto-wolf, just like that. It's terrifying to see. Ghost's entire body language changed. Not sure how he does it, but his shoulders bulge up to look bigger. He lowers his head and glares with merciless, hungry eyes. His muzzle wrinkles to show those titanium fangs. The total effect will give any sane person serious pause. The cat stood there, shivers rippling up and down his body as if a winter wind were blowing on him with blizzard force. I said, "Sit." He sat. Ghost did too, like a gargoyle in the middle of the floor, watchful, ready.
"I have a few questions," I began. "Now, do I really need to go over the rules? Pretty sure you know how this works."
"Why should I tell you anything?" he asked, sneering as he spoke. "You're going to kill me regardless."
I nodded to the other two. I didn't kill them. He ignored Woodpecker and studied Cruella. It was clear from the mess around her that she'd gone through the same fun wake-up process as he had. I saw him watching her chest to see if she was breathing. Then he turned back to me. He had eyes like a Vegas bookmaker, and I could tell he was working out the odds. His whole attitude suddenly shifted from hostage about to be fucked with to a business guy wanting to get to the bottom line. Maybe it was a front, maybe it was his way of regaining some measure of agency over the moment, or maybe he really was as pragmatic as that.
"What will get me out of here alive?"
he asked frankly. "Information is your best shot," I said equally reasonably. "First, tell me about R-33. He looked momentarily shocked, then narrowed his eyes, then he ticked his head toward Cruella.
"So the stupid cunt couldn't keep her mouth shut."
I made a very subtle finger gesture for Ghost, who immediately bared his teeth again. Some people train their dogs to roll over or fist bump. I use mine for messing with people's heads. Ghost gets biscuits either way. The cat flinched back.
"Chipula,"
he cried. It means, "what the dick," local equivalent of "what the fuck." You don't need to know the local language to guess that. A good chunk of his business-like calm dropped right off. "Focus on me," I said coldly, "on what we are talking about. Tell me about R-33. What's the code stand for? What is it, and what does it do?" He kept glancing at Ghost, who was now sitting like a sphinx. "R-33," I prompted. The cat cleared his throat.
"It's an enhancement drug."
"What kind of enhancement? Are we talking super Viagra here, something to sell to the old rich sons of bitches you use to peddle little girls to?"
"No, nothing like that," he said. "This is military grade."
"Meaning what?"
"It's some kind of experimental compound," he said. "It's something new, something that's supposed to increase physical strength and stamina. That's about all I know. I'm just a salesman."
"And what, you're here selling it without being able to describe how it works?"
"Maybe I should have said that I'm just a delivery boy."
"Bullshit," I said. "You're on the executive level, maybe lower tier, but you're no gopher." The cat glanced at Ghost, and then back at me, and switched to English. Very good English, with a thin veneer of a London accent.
"Look, Ledger, I really don't know much, but I'll tell you what I do know, okay?
I'm all ears. The junk in those vials is something new, radical. I got a lecture on it, but I didn't understand one word in 10. I was military before I started doing this, then did PMC stuff for Romania and Germany. I'm half and half, so I've done stuff with corporations in both countries. Ask me about a gun or an RPG or something practical, and I can give you details all the way down to the metallurgy, but this is chemistry. It's some kind of weird chemistry, not my area. The regular salesperson for this is missing, maybe dead. His boat sank somewhere off the Bulgarian coast. The boss thinks it was sabotage, but that's a guess. All they ever found was some debris. I said nothing and kept my face blank. R-33 is supposed to be some kind of super juice, he said. You ever watch those movies about Captain America, about how he got so big and strong? What do they call it, a super soldier formula? Well, that's what this is supposed to be. Something to give PMCs a real upgrade. Not like they become Superman or anything, just a boost to strength and stamina, maybe amp up their speed and reflexes so that one man can do the work of four. Cuts down on the number of contractors someone needs to hire for a gig. And they'll work until they drop. That's what the code letter is for. R for relentless. Relentless, I mused. Right, but it has a double meaning, and I'm afraid if I tell you, you'll hurt me. I smiled. If you tell me the truth, then no, I won't. He thought about it. Okay. The earlier versions of relentless were just that, but this new generation, number 33, it has rage in it. I stared at him. Yes, he said. Not enough to go completely insane, not like in Oslo and Korea, just a touch. It makes them want to kill, but they can still tell friend from foe. The designer originally called it Berserker, after those crazy Vikings, but because it's married to the rage compound, they, well, you understand.
Who developed it?
Dr. Dejan Brozovic, he said. He created Relentless for Kuga, but got clumsy and was arrested. They needed him to finish the development of R-33. The stuff in that case is a test version, but it's probably not very good. I knew that, but these idiots didn't. We were going to let them test it, and if it did work, then we wouldn't need Brozovic. We were stuck because he was in a German Blackside prison until the other night, but I guess you know that. And another piece of the puzzle fell into place. Even her fixers were there to get Brozovic out to perfect Relentless in time for the American operation. Right. The fact that they staged that hit when they did was suggestive. Maybe this American thing was going to happen sooner than later.
Where's his lab? He snorted.
They don't tell guys like me, Ledger. Everything is compartmentalized. Wherever the lab is, they keep all information about it on a need-to-know basis, and the sales force doesn't need to know. When I need to deliver a product, I get an email or text about where to pick it up, a warehouse or paid storage unit somewhere, or in this case, a coin locker at the airport.
Okay, I said. Then tell me about the American operation. He jerked at the mention of that.
Holy shit, he said. How do you even know about that?
Let's go with the fact that I do, and I know a lot. I lied. I want you to tell me what you know, and if the two stories don't line up, it's going to be a bad night for you, kitty cat. If he was scared before, then he was absolutely terrified now.
Look, Ledger, I'm serious. They'll do more than kill me if they find out I told you anything about that. They know where my family lives, my ex-wife, my kids. You have no idea what they're capable of.
I said, Christmas Eve. But he shook his head.
That was ugly, sure, but it was quick. Santoro and his little blonde scorpion, Eve. You think he's psychotic? She's way past him.
I don't care, I said. If you tell me, I'll have my people get to your family and take them somewhere safe, and then I'll make sure Santoro and Eve are cleared off the checkerboard. That's the only option you have. At least with me, your family has a chance. His eyes were wet and his lower lip trembled. I let him think about it for a full 30 seconds.
"I don't know much," he said, "and that's the truth. All I know for sure is that it's going to be soon, and it's going to be loud and messy. Multiple hits. I've heard talk about a concert or a sports thing. They've been waiting to see how things open up now that the COVID vaccine is out there."
"What's G55? He frowned.
"I have no idea."
Sadly, I believed him.
"Look, Ledger," he said, "I know what you've been doing, raiding labs and killing people, people I knew, including friends of mine."
"Boo-hoo," I said.
"No, listen. I know that I haven't given you much here, not about the American op, because I don't know much. Please don't hold that against me. Don't let them kill my ex-wife and kids because I'm a piece of shit. Okay, maybe my ex, she's a bitch, but my kids, man, they're just kids.
How many kids are going to die if this American operation happens?" He shook his head.
"Let me do this," he said. "Let me give you something else."
"I'm listening."
"You need to run. Get the hell out of Europe. Go home, back to the States. I can give you a name or two to check out there. Maybe they'll know more, because if anyone's going to be part of the actual event, it'll be them."
"Give me the names." He did. And also addresses. Deacon Donnelly in Fort Lauderdale and Jimmy John Harris in Laborda, Texas.
"Who are they?"
"Militia."
"What?"
"Those white supremacists you Yanks are always scared of, like those Proud Boys and Boogaloos like that. Those idiots who are all jacked up about the Third Amendment."
"Second Amendment," I corrected.
"Whatever. Cougar's using them. He has his sales guy, Mr. Sunday, recruiting them, and they're sending guns and money to them. I think they're going to use them along with the fixers for whatever this operation is."
I digested that. It was a new puzzle piece, and I wasn't yet sure how well it fit. The problem with this kind of interrogation was that the guy in the hot seat may be giving a lot of intel that is only part of what he really knows, but there's no way to verify it in the moment.
"And there's one more thing," he said.
"Hit me."
"There's a shooter on your ass," said the cat. "Michael Augustus Stafford, very dangerous guy, top of the game."
"I've heard."
"Maybe you have, but last I heard, he was only about a step behind you. If he catches up, then you're dead."
"I can handle my own."
"No," he said, "you can't. Stafford's the best there is."
I smiled. "Let me try." The cat shook his head.
"I'm giving you a fair warning. I've seen him in action. He's as good or better than Santoro. No, that's not right. With knives, guns, or hands, he's better."
"I'll take my chances," I said. "Last question, where can I find Santoro?"
"Who the hell knows? Last I heard, he and Cougar were in Canada, but that's probably misdirection. People aren't allowed to know where they are. One thing I can tell you, though, is if you get close to Jimmy John Harris, he'll know how to get in touch with Mr. Sunday, and Sunday will absolutely know. Play it that way."
I grilled him for a while longer, but his well of information was dry. He sat there, head bowed, sobbing.
"Please,"
he begged.
"Please. That's all."
I watched him for a long time. A minute, maybe two. I lifted my pistol. The Sig Sauer, not the dart gun. I began slowly screwing a sound suppressor onto the threaded muzzle. He looked up sharply.
"Wait, I told you everything I know."
"Sure," I said, "and thanks for that."
"Then what are you doing with that gun?"
I cocked my head and smiled at him. "What did you do before you did this kind of thing? Before Kuga? Before you went to work for Ohan? Tell me what you did." He looked startled.
"What? The girls? What the fuck's that to you?"
"Yes," I said. "The girls. How many of them did you sell?"
I don't know. What does it matter?"
"It matters," I said, and shot him. No witty quip, no see you in hell bullshit. All I did was point the gun and fire a single shot. The bullet punched through the crown of his head and blew a hole the size of a lemon out of the base of his skull. His body never even twitched, just fell over. Ghost gave a single woof, but otherwise did not move a muscle. I sat on the edge of the bed for a very long time. Chapter 133. Nowhere. Mr. Sunday sat cross-legged on the floor. He had tarot cards spread around him. There were bones he'd cast. Some were animal bones, others once belonged to children. He remembered their faces, so sweet and beautiful. Candles burned in bowls and holders, 6 times 6 candles. He was naked, because he preferred being naked. It was so pure. In the corners of the room, flies buzzed and reptiles wrestled and spat. He was about to turn over a card. The magician, the trickster card, his favorite. But the card was upside down. And that made him frown. "Someone is speaking my name," he said aloud. Mr. Sunday turned another card. It was the destroyed tower. It was another favorite card. It foretold so many delightful things, none of them good. He set it down next to the magician. One of the candles guttered and went out. Mr. Sunday stared at it with eyes whose colors swirled and changed, changed and swirled. Chapter 134, Hotel Timișoara, Timișoara, Romania. I spent a long time in the shower, washing off the day, reliving what I'd just done. It had been a strategic choice. I could not take him into custody or even turn him over. Kuga had too much influence backed by an apparently bottomless bank account. And he had Rafael Santoro, the world's most effective extortionist. They would do whatever it took to silence Di Cazze. And there was zero doubt in my mind that innocent people would be hurt or killed in the process. On the other hand, if I'd left him unconscious along with the others, then he would be free. He could plead innocence, and there was no proof he was involved in any crimes. At worst, he'd lawyer up, make bail, and then go dark. No, the math was simple. Except nothing is simple. I leaned back against the cold shower tiles and let the hot water boil me. Last year, my lover, Junie Flynn, asked me if I was becoming blasé about the killing that I sometimes have to do in my job. She was concerned that I was becoming unemotional about it, detached. I did a lot of soul searching over that. But then, on a small island off the coast of North Korea, while leading Havoc team on a mission to discover what had killed all the inhabitants, I had an epiphany. We found the body of a young woman, no ID, no way to ever know her name. She lay in an artless sprawl, her dress hiked up, body robbed of all life, all emotion and potential. Her senseless murder became the focal point for me. I swore to her that I would find whoever did this and tear their world apart. It was for people like her that I did this. It was because there were predatory monsters in this world who will kill the innocent for the political leverage it offered, for profit, for strategic gain, to make a point, or a dozen other criminally obscene reasons. I did not know then that I was hunting Santoro and Kuga. We stopped that plot, and another that was piggybacked onto it. Hooray for the good guys, right? Not really. Everyone on that little North Korean island is still dead, as are more than half the population of a South Korean island hit by the second wave of that bioweapon, and scores of people at the D9 denuclearization summit in Norway. Thousands of innocent victims. And why were they killed? It wasn't a prosecute a political or ideological agenda, and it wasn't a religious crusade, no. The whole thing was to make a profit. Kuga used the attacks on the two Koreas as a practical demonstration of the kind of mayhem his organization peddles, and the ruin of the D9 summit destabilized the global sense of safety, which in turn sent governments and private corporations scrambling to arm up because the shit was hitting the fan. Kuga's black market for weapons ranging from bacteria to high-end combat drones had exploded with new sales. Bottom line, he won. But because I'd done a little bit of damage in the process, Kuga sent Rafael Santoro to slaughter my family. Part of me died that day, too. Not my spirit, not my drive or resolve, no. What they killed was some crucial part of the control I normally have. Last year, I would not have done what I'd just done to Dikatsi. Last year, I would have found some other way. Last year, I had a different set of restraints. Maybe last year I was more human. I don't know. I should probably talk to Junie about it. Or my best friend, Rudy Sanchez. Or someone. Instead, I kept it all bottled up inside, pushed in, stamped down, like shoveling too much coal into a furnace. The woman and Woodpecker were low level, and they were local criminals, not part of the Kuga Empire. Dikatsi was. When I'd left America to go hunting for Santoro and Kuga, I'd done it under a black flag. That was the only banner of war for the darkness, for what I'd become. I knew I'd just committed murder. An execution. What would Junie say? What would Rudy say? What did I feel about it? The water pounded my skin as I stood there. I could see the hazy outline of Ghost through the shower curtain. He was not troubled by moral dilemmas. He was part of my pack of killers. I turned off the water and stepped onto the tiled floor, not caring about leaving puddles. The mirror was fogged, and I hand-wiped it clear, then stood looking at my reflection. Mid-30s, with blonde hair darkened by water, blue eyes filled with ghosts, scars everywhere. I still had the habit of running my tongue over the bridge work from where Santoro had knocked a few teeth out. My nose was more askew than it used to be. Hard to believe I was the man in the mirror. He looked alien to me now, like a monster wearing a skin suit and only pretending to be human. What did I feel about myself? What did I feel about having just executed a helpless prisoner? What did I feel about the real possibility that even if I won this fight, I'd lose myself to the darkness forever? What did I feel about any of that? I'm not sure I felt anything at all. Chapter 135. The Playroom. Undisclosed location near Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. It was another late call in a string of them. Knowing that Sunday was probably going to call made Kuga start drinking early so that by the time the phone rang, the bourbon would have sanded off all the edges. Even so, that first ring hit his nervous system like a bucket of cold water. As always, Kuga took the call in his room, though it seemed that Sunday had some creepy way of knowing when he was alone. That had bothered Kuga for months, so he had his people do regular sweeps of his bedroom, walk-in closet, bathroom, sitting room, and even the hallway outside his personal suite. No bugs. And yet Sunday never called, except when Kuga was alone. He pressed the button. Hello. You sound grumpy. It's late. The hell do you want? Oh, it's something I've been meaning to discuss with you. Not as an employee, but as a friend and advisor. Friend? Oh, yes, said Sunday. We are friends. We are very close. Even if you don't invite me over very often. How many times has it been now? Oh, that's right. Once. Sorry if your feelings are hurt. I'm sorry to see you so stressed all the time. Who says I am? It's in your voice, said Sunday. It's in your attitude. And it's obvious in that you never leave that fortress of yours. Time was when you'd have been bouncing from one place to another, living the high life, getting laid in only the very best places. Now, you've become a nervous hermit.
Well, it's not like half the first world nations don't want my head on a pike.
And whose fault is that?
What's that supposed to mean?
It means, said Sunday, that had a certain someone not bungled Oslo and allowed the authorities to make an educated guess as to who Kuga really is, your life would be a lot more comfortable.
Hey, that was as much my fault as Raphael's.
Was it? Tell me. And don't lie, because you know I always know. If Santoro had not gone totally against policy and physically been on site in Oslo, would the world governments have actually connected the rage attacks directly to you? To you personally? No, I don't think they could have. Before he was videotaped engaging in pointless fisticuffs with Joe Ledger, your involvement was only a rumor. But since you and he were the only two people broken out of that prison 2 years ago, the connection became obvious.
Kuga said nothing. He wished he'd brought a fresh bottle and some ice with him to bed.
Moreover, continued Sunday, if Santoro hadn't forgotten about the golden rule of not taking things personally, he'd have never tried for revenge against Joe Ledger. Killing Ledger's family was Santoro giving a consolation gift to Eve for losing her family. Adam. And what's the result? Ledger has slaughtered his way up the food chain looking for him and for you.
I began Kuga, but he had nowhere to go with it.
Santoro used to be the king of subtlety, the author of the best long-range plans of manipulation and coerced control. Now what is he? An emotional wild card. A liability who is endangering the American operation, our entire operation, and you personally.
I thought you were taking care of Ledger. Is that what your mumbo-jumbo Lord Voldemort crap was all about? The darkness bullshit?
You talk as if that is as certain as a bullet fired from point-blank range, said Sunday. I've done real damage to Ledger, and even if he survives, he'll never recover. But the rage Santoro awakened in him has its own power. There is a war for control of his soul. And what Santoro did is in danger of canceling what you wanted me to do.
Fuck.
But the real reason I called was to suggest that you take steps.
If you think I'm going to put a contract out on Raphael, then you're out of your...
No, 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 nothing like that, laughed Sunday. I'm suggesting something more immediately practical. I think you need to make sure that someone else has access to the overall network. Command, I mean. I think you need to delegate some of the responsibilities.
Oh, sure. To whom? To you?
That's not what I'm suggesting, said Sunday. Perhaps to a kind of board, under your authority, but clearly sharing the responsibility for plans drawn and actions taken.
Why the hell would I want to do that?
Because you have enemies, my friend, said Sunday. Ledger may be out there crashing and burning because that level of madness isn't self-sustaining, but Church undoubtedly sees you as the principal threat, and let's face it, he's not at all above sending assassins out to take you off the board. He believes that if he cuts off the head of the dragon, the whole empire will collapse into infighting. I doubt he's wrong about that. I mean, if, God forbid, something happened to you, can you see Santoro, as emotionally compromised as he's become running your empire? On the other hand, if there is a clear infrastructure in place, you stop being a critical winner-take-all target.
Kuga sat on the edge of the bed. I'm listening, he said. Chapter 136.
Hotel Timișvara, Timișvara, Romania. After the shower, I got dressed and then sat at the small desk in the suite and hacked into the hotel security channel and the local police frequency. Things were hysterical for a while, but by 4 in the morning, things were settling down. I looked at Cruella and Woodpecker, but they were still sleeping. I wondered what their dreams were like. I considered shooting them too, just in case. Thought about it, but didn't do it. So far, the darkness was there, moving within me, fighting for dominance, but hadn't totally overwhelmed me. So far, the three other aspects of my broken mind were in control, barely, but there. So far, I wasn't in the same room with Rafael Santoro or Kuga. When that happened, I knew the darkness would own me, own the moment, own the world. I both feared and prayed for that moment. I wiped down every surface, packed up my equipment, buckled Ghost's service vest in place, put on dark glasses, and we made our way carefully from the hotel. Chapter 137. Hotel Timișvara, Timișvara, Romania. The street outside was busy, with dozens of official cars and news vehicles parked at crooked angles to the front of the hotel. It was dark. Dawn wasn't even a rumor. A crowd of people were gathered to rubberneck. In the lobby by the front door, a worried-looking hotel official, flanked by 2 stern cops, was checking everyone's ID, matching it against the guest registry, and in some cases, taking individuals away for pat-downs. My credentials were unbreakable. The identification they scanned was not associated with the room near where the exchange happened, or the room where I'd interrogated the 3 black marketeers. I'd been very thorough when I'd set this up. My ID was attached to a room with no particular view, and I was an Italian national on a lecture tour of Central Europe. I taught computer keyboarding for the vision impaired. The cops opened my suitcase and checked through clothes, books, toiletries. They searched my laptop case and found a computer with a braille keyboard and other devices that you'd expect to find. None of these were brand new, but obviously well used, even down to some muffin crumbs stuck between keys. One of them actually waved a hand in front of my eyes. They also checked the service animal serial number on Ghost's vest, ran it through their system, and finally repacked my stuff for me. The R33 materials were sealed inside the shell of the laptop, and some of the cash was wrapped in plastic and rolled up inside 2 cans of dog food, with the smelly glop on top in case they opened the cans. The rest of the cash was on the floor with the 3 people I'd interrogated. I'd taken a roll of bills and shoved them in each of their mouths. Sure, it was a juvenile and cruel thing to do. So what? It was a kind of mobster gesture that would likely send the cops off in the wrong direction. The search was done well, but they weren't looking for someone like me. They probably figured that whoever hit that room was long gone. They hadn't even knocked on my door. There would be a street-by-street search and then a national manhunt. Thank you, I said in Italian-accented Romanian as I took my papers back. Ghost sat there the whole time, staring into the middle distance. He really can act, and I foresaw some treats and belly rubs in his near future. Do you have a driver? Asked the hotel official. I was going to take a taxi, I said. It's beginning to rain, sir, he said. I'll have someone fetch you a cab. He handed me off to a doorman who, indeed, flagged a lemon-colored taxi, put my bag in the trunk. Very polite, very considerate of the poor blind guy and his docile service dog. Chapter 138. Trade Union Building, Strada Mareșești, Timișvara, Romania. The sniper had the perfect vantage point, and the weather gods were being kind to him. The building across the intersection from the hotel had a low wall around the roof with the big metal housing for the air conditioner snugged over to one corner, the correct corner. In the niche between the AC and the wall, there was a comfortable place to wait, and he'd waited for hours.
That was fine. The sniper was a very patient man. His name was Sidenkepi. Only that. It meant heart pine cone, a nickname whose significance was lost to time because the group of fellow soldiers who'd hung it on him were all dead. Long dead. Each lost to this war or that, or to this covert job or that. Only Sidenkepi remained. He did not consider himself a fighter. His hand-to-hand skills were only ever okay. He did not like humping 80 pounds of equipment through deserts or windy mountain passes. Sidenkepi always joked that he was the world's laziest man, which was why he'd picked sniping as a profession. You got to sit around a lot, relax, wait, watch. As he was watching now, it was one of the skills that his mentor, his master, Michael Augustus Stafford, had taught him. Watching. Being patient. Letting the target come to him. Letting the target prove through incaution that he wanted the bullet. He'd arrived before the meeting between the local black market chaps and Kuga's team. His brief was simple. If a man fitting a certain description and accompanied by a large white dog left the hotel at any point, Sidenkepi was to take him out. That order had been reissued with a stern demand that it be done with extreme prejudice. Apparently the meat had gone south and the players taken off the board. That meant the package Kuga's agent was to hand over to the Romanian had been taken. The target would likely have it. The target would be in disguise. That didn't matter to Sidenkepi. He had the eyes of a predator bird, a hawk or falcon, and was not distracted by false mustaches, wigs, or a phony limp. He'd studied this man, seen footage of him, and would know him in a snowstorm. Sidenkepi spent time setting up his equipment. A small laptop fed real-time information to him through earbuds. A folding stool kept him comfortable so he didn't have to kneel for hours. And, of course, there was the rifle. A Finnish gun that Sidenkepi had used many times. Not the same gun, but one like it. He tended to use one of three or four different weapons for jobs like these. Guns he knew intimately. His pick for tonight was a Sako TRG-42 long-range sniper rifle. Without a doubt, one of the finest sniper rifles in the world. It was a much improved version of the old Sako TRG-41, on which Sidenkepi had learned his trade. The TRG-42 had a new and very comfortable stock design, and the weapon was designed to handle more powerful cartridges with a maximum length of 95 millimeters. It was a manually operated bolt-action rifle chambered for .338 Lapua Magnum cartridges. That gave him an effective range of 1,500 meters. During daylight hours, he used the Picatinny-type scope, but as a coming storm darkened the day and night fell, he switched to a night-vision scope, the kind adjusted to accept some artificial light, streetlights and the neon around the hotel entrance, without blinding him. Very expensive and very subtle technology. The other bit of tech, he added, was a sound suppressor of a kind that also reduced muzzle flash. Sidenkepi liked things nice and quiet. As the hours passed, he watched the arrival of police and crime scene units. He saw ambulances appear and then vanish. He saw crowds gather to watch, dispersing only a little as the first raindrops fell. He listened to police chatter via his comms unit and got updates from his handler. He knew everything that took place inside the hotel. Almost. The target had vanished, presumably to a bolt hole within the place. The computer team working logistics and intelligence did pattern and keyword searches on the guests booked into each room. Only one of them had a dog. A blind man. And one whose credentials were beautifully constructed, even down to small details on social media platforms. Very sophisticated. That made Sidenkepi smile. He appreciated good tradecraft. It was full dark when the blind man and his white service dog stepped out of the hotel. Sedunkapi shifted into position. The rain was blowing toward the hotel, which meant that the air conditioner housing blocked it from splatting on him. The angle of the wind kept almost all droplets off his scope. Nice. The blind man was blocked for a few seconds by a helpful member of the staff and the driver of a cab. A suitcase and laptop case were put into the trunk. No bags that resembled the ones taken from the meeting room, but he didn't expect to see those. He tested the wind and made very slight adjustments to his sights. Ready. Patient. The man then moved away from the hotel staff member and the driver, and the shot was clear and easy. Sedunkapi slipped his finger into the trigger guard, took a breath, and exhaled as he pulled the trigger. Chapter 139 The Pavilion, Blue Diamond Elite Training Center, Stevens County, Washington. Bunny was out walking. He and Top took turns strolling around, making sure that they were never directly looking at anything important, but letting their button cams pick up details.
"Turn just a little bit to the left,"
said Andrea, who was somewhere in the woods processing the intel.
"Gorilla balls, what is that?"
Bunny, of course, said nothing. 40 feet away, a group of pavilion technicians were using a forklift to place K-110 fighting machines into huge crates. There was a line of 9 such crates and 3 more on the back of a stake-bed semi. Other techs were busy securing the loaded crates to the truck bed with canvas straps and chains. The crates were marked Medical Equipment C-19.
"Accidente," cried Andrea. "What clever bastards they are! Cipalle!"
Bunny lingered for as long as he could, no more than a few seconds, and then moved on to complete his daily morning walk. Later, Top would go jogging through here. Chapter 140 Hotel Timișoara, Timișoara, Romania. But just as I was about to step into the car, I heard a strange sound. A soft whisk of air passed my cheek and immediately a light thunk of something striking asphalt nearby. There was so much hustle and noise on the street that no one else seemed to have heard it. I ducked my ass immediately into the car and shifted to the center of the rear bench seat, pushing Ghost down on the floor.
"Hurry, please," I said to the driver. "I need to make my flight."
He pulled away, and then we were gone. My pulse was hammering because I knew both of those sounds. The first had been a bullet passing within inches of my face. How many inches? Hard to say, though I've been in enough firefights to know that's what it was. 4 inches? Less? There is a distinctive way the lead cleaved through the air. And the other sound was that same bullet hitting the blacktop on which I stood. It had been a very solid impact, too. A rifle bullet. Which meant there was a sniper positioned in some high, hidden, elevated shooting position. He tried to shoot me, which meant he knew who I was, but something had caused him to miss with that first shot. He hadn't taken another. Snipers are fast, so maybe his angle was obscured, or maybe I was lucky enough to have been getting into the car already when he fired. But luck was a funny thing. I don't have that much of it. And I don't trust it worth a hollowed damn, so why had the shooter missed? I sat, tense as fuck, crouched as low as I could, pretending to adjust Ghost's harness, expecting the rear or side window to implode with the next shot as the sniper corrected the angle. However, there was no next shot. He'd missed his shot and hadn't tried again. Why not? He could have extrapolated where I was once I was in the car. 3 spaced shots in a line, 20 or so inches apart, and at that angle, would have hit some part of me, no matter how I hid in the back.
"Hurry, please,"
I snarled, and the car pulled out into the street. I crouched, breathless, terrified, trying to block Ghost. The dog whimpered softly in fear and frustration. He was always in tune with me. He knew we were in trouble. Very bad trouble. We sped through the rain-swept darkness. The cab headed to the airport, and I don't think I started breathing for 3 full blocks. At the airport, I went into the terminal and straight to the closest men's room. I changed my clothes, then went to a coin locker to retrieve a different set of travel documents and ID, and headed to security, and, as an Austrian music historian traveling with his emotional support dog, boarded a jet for Innsbruck Airport. Below us, the land fell away, and we rose above the clouds and vanished into the night. Chapter 141. Roof of the Belvedere Restaurant, Timișoara, Romania. The woman knelt there, a figure wrapped in darkness, lost in shadows, invisible. She studied the rooftop across the street through a Night Force Optics 5.5 22x56 NXS rifle scope mounted on her Accuracy International's L115A3, the best 338 rifle on the market. Finding the other sniper had taken time and patience, but she knew he had to be there, somewhere. All her intel and all her instincts said he must be there, in the dark. A ghost, like she was. He was good, though. No rookie errors of allowing the metal or glass of his weapon to reach into the path of any stray light. Finding an expert is one of the most challenging and frustrating parts of the game. Snipers know how not to be found. But in the end, the sniper needs to take a shot. The woman calculated the best angle for the kill and balanced it against the sniper's need to escape. In daylight, at a distance of 800 to 1,200 meters, the muzzle flash is minimal unless they are looking right at it. Bullets travel faster than sound, so the target never hears it, and the report is difficult to echolocate. However, the woman followed the sniper's line of sight to the street, where a man in an overcoat and black glasses, a blind man, was getting into a cab with his dog. The man was big and had pale hair. The dog was white as snow. The woman tucked the stock of the rifle against her shoulder and fired. The timing was very nearly tragic. The sniper was more prepared than she'd thought, and he fired at the same moment. Or the tiniest fraction of that moment. Her weapon fired a bullet at the approximate speed of sound, 340.3 meters per second, and it struck the sniper in the eye as his finger pulled the trigger. The difference was 1/10,000th of a second. At that angle, at that distance, with the reduction of the sound suppressor, that was enough. His bullet hit the asphalt 20 inches from the blonde man's right shoe. Her bullet blew the sniper's head apart. Below, the cab rolled away and vanished into the Timișoara night. There were no yells or whistles, no sirens. The sniper's shot had missed and, in the confusion, gone unnoticed. Had Joe Ledger noticed? She thought so, from his body language and how fast he'd gotten out of the line of fire, how fast the cab had moved off. Joe Ledger must think he was lucky, or that the shooter had misjudged. That was fine. He was not a lucky man, not in most ways, but he had some good fortune. He was lucky in his friends, lucky to have people who loved him.
"Be safe, Joseph,"
murmured the woman. Even Ledger did not know her real name. Like most people, he called her by a nickname, a code name, a combat call sign. Violin. The cab was gone now. Violin packed up her weapon, and then she, too, faded into the darkness to where Harry and Toys waited for her. Chapter 142. The Playroom, undisclosed location near Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Sunday called Cougar late in the evening.
"Jesus,"
growled Cougar, pawing his eyes clear so he could see the caller ID. It was an icon of a coyote.
"Why are you calling at this hour? Is something wrong?"
"Nothing's wrong, my friend," said Sunday smoothly. "Just calling to see how you are."
"I'm drunk and tired, is how I am," growled Cougar. and this is hardly the time for a little chit-chat.
I wanted to tell you three things. First, I closed the deal with our militia friends in Florida. That makes 50 groups now, a complete set.
Yeah?
Yes, indeed. The incentives and product samples did the trick, and they said that they are very much on board for our little party.
Okay, that's awesome. But you could have told me this tomorrow.
It is tomorrow, said Sunday.
Technically, but I just got into bed. What's the second thing?
HK is shipping the support materials out.
Again, that could have waited until tomorrow.
This last little bit of gossip can't wait, said Sunday. Joe Ledger is on a plane to these United States. His flight left not 5 minutes ago.
Kuga was completely awake now. He sat up and swung his legs off the bed.
Are you sure?
Of course.
Where's he going?
Fort Lauderdale.
What?
Yes. Isn't that interesting? Clearly, he knows something, and I wonder how he could have gotten wind of anything related to our little venture. Tell me, Kuga, who all knew about that?
Just you, Santoro, and me.
Yes, said Sunday. I find that very interesting. You didn't blab, and I know I didn't. I wonder how Ledger got wind of this.
Kuga got up and walked to the window. The mansion was huge and the night outside vast, but suddenly it felt like all the walls were closing in on him.
Where's Stafford?
I sent him after Ledger in your fast little jet, said Sunday. It's what Raphael should have done.
Patriots, Part 7. But I've a rendezvous with death at midnight in some flaming town. Alan Seeger. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie. Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. Wilfred Owen.
Chapter 143. Timisoara Trianguia International Airport.
I found a quiet place in the airport and made a call that I didn't want to make. No, not Junie. I was still too much of a coward for that. Maybe I'd never find the courage. Maybe I wouldn't live long enough to have to. God, what Rudy would make of that thought. Me thinking that death was an easier, healthier, better choice than calling the woman I love. What a hero. So the call I actually made was to church. His private line. Last thing I wanted was to have the call broadcast over the speakers at the talk. Church answered right away, and his voice was understandably cautious.
Outlaw, he said. Boss, you've been busy.
A bit.
The intel you sent has been quite useful.
It's scaring the hell out of me, I said.
There's some of that around here as well. How secure is this line?
It's a burner never used before, I said, and I'll trash it after. I'm in a place where no one can hear me, so we can talk. There was a last call announcement for a flight.
You're at the Brandenburg Airport, he said.
Yeah, but that wasn't my flight. I paused. Look, I don't know how much you've been able to piece together. You have a lot of what I've learned, but not all of it. I think we need to compare notes.
He said, cybernetically and chemically enhanced fixers with superior body armor, some in fighting machines. The fixers are driven by a compound called R-33, which is a mix of a new generation of eugeroic therapies codenamed Relentless. The latest version is mixed with the Rage bioweapon. There is something called the American Operation, possibly codenamed G-55, in which those fixes intend to stage an attack, resulting in mass casualties.
He paused. How am I doing so far?
You got all that from what I sent?
From that and from the materials, samples, and data files recovered from Croatia. Am I missing anything? Do you know about Mr. Sunday? Yes, the sales director for Kuga. Bug is trying to find a way into his presentations on the darknet.
Showroom, I said.
Yes.
I have no other intel on him.
What else do you have?
I was near a window looking out at the big planes landing and taking off. I saw a bunch of the same nightbirds standing in a line on a disused in-flight catering truck, maybe 60 of them, and I swear they were watching me.
Do you know about the militia groups?
No, that's not in our materials. What have you learned?
I told him what the cat told me. It wasn't much.
That's new, said Church. I'll have Bug put people on it.
I'm going to follow up some leads of my own, I said. I'm on my way back to the States, but look, I don't want backup, and I don't want a crowd scene. Let me do this my way.
Is there anything else you can tell me?
The guy who told me about the militia thinks they're going to hit a stadium, maybe a sports game or a concert. He didn't have details, but thought it was going to be sometime in the next month. Sorry I can't be more precise.
You've given us a lot, Outlaw, said Church. If it hadn't been for your actions, we would be considerably behind the curve.
Maybe we still are.
Or maybe now we have a chance to react in time when something happens. At the very least, we'll be able to make contact with some of my friends in the government and elsewhere and give them a heads up.
Yeah, but our challenge is always that we're by nature a reactive organization. That's why I'm following these leads. I can't just sit and wait.
You don't need to justify your actions to me, Outlaw.
Boss, I said, I know you meant well sending toys after me, but don't do that again. I'm not entirely stable.
I think you know that.
He's probably told you what I did. It came up in conversation.
I've done a lot of questionable things.
Would it comfort you at all to know that I, in my time, have done much worse?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm about a long mile from real perspective.
Give it time, Outlaw. You're doing better than you think.
I want to ask you something, and I don't want you to think I'm an idiot or that I've gone completely off my rocker.
Try me, said Church.
You know about a lot of supernatural stuff, right?
I'm familiar with the scholarship and traditions of the larger world.
What do you know about flocks of black birds? Not just crows, but all kinds, flocking together.
There was a pause.
Tell me, he said, his voice devoid of all emotion.
Are they by any chance particularly ragged-looking? As if they're all molting or wind-blown?
I looked at the birds. Now there were more than 100.
Yes, I said. Tell me where you've seen them. My flight will be boarding soon. Tell me.
So I told him. And as I did so, I realized that there were more incidents than I'd been consciously aware of.
And these nightbirds have been following you since Croatia? They first appeared after the incident in the basement?
Yes. What did you call them? Nightbirds?
Two words. Nightbirds.
How scared should I be?
Very, he said, and now there was a new note in his voice. Not of them. No, definitely not of them. But of who it is they hate.
I have no idea what the hell that means.
Outlaw, Joe, listen to me. The nightbirds are omens. They warn people of certain kinds of threats. There is a great deal of literature about this, but what you need to know is that they have often been reported during times when a certain person is awake and alive in the world.
Awake and alive? You just went all Bram Stoker on me. Who are you?
And my words trailed off because I realized exactly
who he was talking about.
No, I said.
No fucking way. You killed him.
I never said I killed him, said Church. I merely stopped him. For a time.
You're saying Nicodemus is involved in all this?
Yes, said Church. I'm sorry to say that he is. Chapter 144. Phoenix House, Amphorae Island, Greece. Church set down the phone, removed his glasses, and pinched the bridge of his nose. Old scars on his skin flared with remembered pain. Deeper wounds that ran all the way to his heart ached with fear and weariness.
Nicodemus, he said to the soft shadows in his office. Too soon.
Then he picked up the phone again and began making a series of calls. The first was to Lilith to tell her and suggest she warn Violin.
Ledger is seeing nightbirds, she asked.
He is.
That means he is very close to the veil, she said. He is more in Death's kingdom than this one.
Yes.
You may never bring him back, Saint-Germain. Not this time.
I know. His next call was to Bug to make sure his people included the new information from Ledger.
Militia guys?
Asked Bug.
Is he sure?
His source was sure.
Okay,
Bug said, sounding as comprehensively tired as Church felt.
I'll spin this up, and Joe wants us to look at something in the next month or two?
Yes, but my gut tells me that this will happen sooner than later. He called Scott Wilson.
I was just about to ring you, said Wilson by way of a hello. We just heard from our team at the pavilion.
What's happening there?
Seems as if our bad guys are loading some of the combat tech for transport. The feed from Bunny's cam was clear, so we have visuals and a license plate number. I've already instructed Andrea to put a drone on that truck.
What is the drive time to East Texas? Same question for Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
28 to 32 hours to that part of Texas, 45 to 50 for Florida. More if you count stops for food, fuel, and sleep.
Assume this is straight through. I want routes plotted and make sure there's a backup to the drones.
Very well, agreed Wilson.
Two more things, said Church. First, Ledger is inbound. Not sure which of those two locations he's heading for. Check flights from Brandenburg leaving any time from right now to 4 hours out.
Easy enough. What's the other thing?
There's a new player in this.
Friend or foe?
Definitely foe, said Church. Nicodemus.
God save the Queen.
Church called Toys.
I was rather expecting you to call, said Toys. Violin just had a rather disturbing call from her mum.
No doubt. Put this call on speaker. He gave them all of it, including the intel from Bunny.
We are on our way, said Violin. At the airport now.
Hurry, said Church. Chapter 145. Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood International Airport, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I tried to sleep on the plane. Tried being the operative word. Much of the flight was a blur, though. Not because the darkness owned my ass again. I don't think that happened. No, it was more that I was tired. Beyond words. Jacked to the eyeballs with caffeine, heartsick, and scared. Scared of Nicodemus. Scared of what I had become, especially if that meant I was a puppet and Nicodemus had his hand up my ass. Scared of what Kuga was about to do. Just plain scared. Now the Church was up to speed with everything, I probably should have felt comforted, but Ghost was on the seat next to me, and in his sleep, he moaned. It sounded like he was in pain. When I put my hand on the nape of his neck, he shuddered and settled into a deeper place in his dreams. The place where the mind is vulnerable and the fear can't escape, even through involuntary sounds or movements. We flew on. When we landed in Fort Lauderdale, the wheels hitting the tarmac jolted me out of a doze I wasn't aware I was in. Ghost yipped, and I realized that in my surprise I'd squeezed my hand on his ruff. "Sorry, boy," I said. He gave me a withering look. We deplaned, and I did my trick of going into the bathroom and changing clothes from what was in my carry-on, and switched Ghost from emotional support to just a dog. We went to Enterprise, and I used a fake ID to rent a bland white Ford Edge. Once in the car, I drove us out of the airport and to a grocery store, loaded up on dog food, dog treats, a new rubber ball, also for the dog, and a handful of items for me. I also bought a tourist guide to the area and 4 burner phones. The clerk raised an eyebrow at those, and I gave him a ninja death stare until he looked away. He no doubt thought I was in the drug trade. Packages in hand, we walked to the Edge, which I'd parked next to a whitewashed stone wall. A man stepped out from between my car and a white panel truck parked next to me. He was roughly the size of Godzilla and had a face like an eroded wall and wore a Don't Tread on Me ball cap and a windbreaker with a tattered American flag on the right chest. Out of my peripheral vision, I saw another man, thinner and with flaming red hair like the comedian Carrot Top, come up on my right. A third, wiry and fit, covered with tattoos of snakes coiling around swastikas, came around the front of the truck. Godzilla had his hand inside a nylon windbreaker.
"Joe Ledger," he said, smiling.
That's the moment where you're supposed to freeze, look shocked beyond words, maybe say something like a stuttering,
"What?"
From Godzilla's shit-eating grin, it was clear he was ready to milk that kind of reaction. I threw the shopping bag hard at his face and heard the meaty thunk as 6 cans of Alpo caught him on the mouth, but I was pivoting left, reaching for Carrot Top as Ghost went in and left and slammed into Snake Man. Carrot Top was quick and tried to raise the gun he'd held down behind his thigh so it would be out of sight of witnesses. Fast? Sure, but I'm faster. I hit him on the bridge of the nose with the side of my balled-up fist. His nose exploded, and the force knocked his head back, exposing his throat, so I pivoted and whipped him across the Adam's apple with the left forearm. He went down, gurgling and thrashing, while I spun back to Godzilla, whose face was bloody and already beginning to swell. The impact had spoiled his draw, and the big Glock snagged on the inside of the jacket. I used my left palm to pin his wrist against his chest and caught him across the point of the jaw with my palm. If you do it just right, moving your hand in a sharp, very fast circle, the blow spins the jaw all the way around, much faster than the body can deal with. The result is a sprained neck, dislocated jaw, concussion, and a total disruption of the synovial fluid in the inner ear. He staggered and collapsed back against my SUV. I boxed his ears and kicked his kneecap loose, but before he could fall, I tore his jacket open and took the Glock. I whirled toward Carrot Top, but he was down, no longer making sounds, no longer breathing. Ghost had Snake Man on the ground, and titanium fangs had turned the man's throat to ground beef, all of it in 3 seconds. Maybe 2. "Ghost," I snapped. "Done. Off." He disengaged, reluctantly. I grabbed all 3 of their guns and my sack of groceries, unlocked my car, and ordered Ghost to get in, but as he ran around to the open driver's door, someone opened up with another handgun. I ducked down as the bullets knocked jagged splinters from the wall. Ghost screamed in pain, and I couldn't tell if it was a splinter or a bullet. His shoulder was pouring blood, and when he tried to run toward the open doorway, his legs buckled. More shots punched into the hood of the car and the windshield, filling the glass with spiderweb cracks. I pivoted to return fire, but the gunman crouched behind an open car door, and there were terrified pedestrians behind him, some running, others frozen in shock. So I scooped to pick up Ghost, and it was a measure of his pain.